Hi, I'm Susan Lewis. I sat down with violinist Gil Shaham when he was in town to play Bartok's violin concerto with the Philadelphia Orchestra. I first asked him what the story was behind the concerto.
Oh, you know, that's an excellent question, and I don't know the answer. I have a great friend who lives in Lyon in France. Her name is Claire de la Marche, and Claire is an obsessive Bartokian. I don't remember when the Bartok bug caught her, but I want to say maybe 20 years ago or maybe even longer, she decided to learn everything about Béla Bartok. And she learned the Hungarian language and is now fluent in Hungarian and made many trips over there and over to this part of the world, to New York, to trace Bartok and his history. And she actually published a book a couple of years ago, a biography of Bartok's life and works, and I think has received many awards. And so when I've asked her about this concerto and my personal feeling that it might have something autobiographical to it, she seems to agree. And I think many musicologists have suggested that this piece was Bartok's farewell to Hungary. You know, if you think of the violin in Hungarian culture, you know, it's such a traditional part of life there. I remember hearing stories of people going to taverns, going to restaurants in Hungary where there are just violins everywhere. There are lots of violins, but no violin cases, the story goes. So people would just walk in and pick up a fiddle and start, you know, a little czardas and, you know, just part of Hungarian culture. And there is something so beautiful about this piece, about, you know, this juxtaposition of very folk-like material, you know, beautiful Hungarian melodies, the orchestra, the violin, imitating traditional Hungarian instruments, you know, such as the cymbalum, and this juxtaposition with something completely new, you know, modernity, new harmonies, new rhythms, new textures. And I suppose there's something about that conflict of the modern world and the tradition that was really the story of every emigre from Eastern Europe in the 1930s.
Well, that is so interesting, because I was going to ask you, how do you incorporate Hungarian folk melodies with kind of a 12-tone theme kind of music?
Isn't that amazing? And he does very famously use the 12-tone serialist row in this piece. I remember Yehudi Menuhin. I was very lucky to speak to him about this piece. And he told me when he met Bartok the first time to discuss this work, he said, Bartok asked him, if I remember correctly, Bartok asked, you know, Sir Yehudi, he said, what do you think of this passage? And Menuhin said, well, it seems quite chromatic. You know, he didn't want to say 12-tone because that was Arnold Schoenberg's system. And apparently Bartok said, well, it's a 12-tone row. Essentially, he wanted to show, or he wanted to try to make beautiful melodies out of the 12-tone row. And it's not clear if it was meant tongue-in-cheek or if it was sort of an earnest attempt. My personal kind of pet favorite little moment in the piece is a moment in the last movement where this melody is transformed and it becomes, there's like a little jazz band, you know, with triangle and harp and violin, and they play a waltz, you know, and they play a 12-tone jazz waltz, you know, you know. So you see, he really does manage to weave all these elements, 12-tone jazz, waltzing, and make a coherent whole.
And it's so interesting that he wrote this the year before he emigrated to the United States, because you do hear those jazz elements in the first movement as well. And he was also writing a clarinet trio dedicated to Benny Goodman the same time he was writing this. So maybe he was both looking back and looking forward.
You know, when I speak to composers about this piece, they all revere it. And I think it must be a compositional tour de force, you know. So many composers, oh, that first movement, you know, if I could only write something like the first movement of Bartok's Second Violin Concerto. I think he had a way, like all the great masters, of studying these styles and becoming absolutely fluent in them. And that means jazz and clarinet writing and violin writing and symphonic writing and everything, everything. He was just 100% fluent in these idioms.
Well, now to put this in context, this is part of your larger project, the Violin Concertos of the 1930s. You have volume one out. Volume two will have this concerto on it.
That's right.
And the last time we spoke about, when we were talking about the Berg Violin Concerto, we were talking about how many violin concertos were written in the 1930s.
It is such a curious coincidence, right? Yeah.
And the other thing that's funny is when we talked about Berg, apparently Berg did not initially want to write a violin concerto, but he was moved to do so to honor his friend Manon Gropius, who died. And Bartok didn't want to write a violin concerto either, but the violinist...
You know, I can never pronounce the Hungarian names properly, so I always call him Zoltán Sekai, but I'm not sure that's right. Sekai? Maybe I'll let one of your listeners pronounce it better, better than I can.
He wanted a violin concerto, and Bartok wanted to write a set of variations, and he ended up compromising and writing something that had a little bit of both.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's right. Actually, that we have that recording. I'm sure it's up on YouTube of that amazing violinist Sekai performing the premiere of the concerto. And it's quite a magical performance. The slow movement is somewhat unusually a set of variations. And people have always also noted that, you know, there are elements of the piece that are mirror image, you know. So in the beginning of the first movement, you have the sort of risoluto theme, the sort of kind of march, you know, metronome marking 120. And then at the second half of the movement, it's mirror image. And kind of overall, it's interesting that all three movements are somehow variations of each other, or I guess variations of the first movement, since you hear the first movement first. The second movement is a reworking of materials from the first movement, and so is the third.
So how is your project going? Are you going through the violin concertos in any particular order?
I'm not really. I mean, I think I said last time, and I feel the same, that it's just been a wonderful excuse to play music that I love. And as you said, the next recording we'll release will be Prokofiev's Second Violin Concerto with Eric Jacobson conducting the Knights Orchestra of New York and Stéphane Deneuve conducting Bartok's Second Violin Concerto with the Südwest Rundfunks Orchestra, the orchestra in Stuttgart. And it's been an amazing journey. It's been fascinating to hear people react to this music. People talk about iconic music, and I think that word is often overused. You know, oh, this is iconic, you know. But I think in the case of many of these pieces, and certainly Bartok's Second, you can say this is an iconic work in the symphonic repertoire.
Because?
Oh, you know, it's symbolic of the times. It's emblematic of the composer's style, and it's kind of a point of departure. You know, every composer since will refer to the Bartok's Second Concerto. You know, you would say, you know, you can start a sentence by saying violin concertos up until Bartok's Second, or you can say violin concertos starting with the Second Concerto of Béla Bartok. And I think that's what makes a work of art iconic, you know, to justify that word.
Thanks so much for talking to us.
Thank you. Nice to be with you.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.